What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day?
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius. And for the second game in a row, the Lakers beat a team with a better record than them. And for the second game in a row, it was in large part due to their defense. What is this that's going on, D? After giving up 71 points in the first half, the Lakers hold the Denver Nuggets under 20 points in both the third and fourth quarters, just 36 points in the second half. And Lakers complete a 16-point comeback win with just a little bit of help from Luka. Absolute masterclass from him. I want to geek out with you a little bit later about that. But talk to me, D. We saw some things. They made a big adjustment in that second half defensively.
They did. Denver's got a Luka problem.
I was going to say this later too. Yes, we'll talk about that later. The Luka problem. Yep.
I'll be very interested to talk about him in a little bit. But the Lakers had a freaking Jamal Murray making everything problem.
Spencer Jones making everything problem. Spencer Jones is like God decided to make him Michael Kidd Gilchrist.
Yes.
Tried to give him MKG's jump shot, but stopped like 70% through. What is that jumper? And it went in four straight times.
The elbow out on the one side.
Oh, it's disgusting.
And the push shot. And I'm just like, what is this? And a two-hand follow through. Okay. But look, this is the beauty of a jump shot. It's like a golf swing. As long as it comes off your fingers the same way every single time, It could look like horseshit on the way out. But if it tastes like filet mignon on the way in, then you're good to go. And that was Jones.
That was all their shooting. They were like 9-for-11 to start that game.
And he's been doing this for them. He's been a real find for them. I think he's on a two-way contract. He's one of the many two ways around the league where This guy's going to need to get converted.
Yeah.
I live in Warriors country. They talk about Pat Spencer this way as well, where it's just like, oh no, this guy's going to have to get converted sooner or later. We may be having the same conversation about Drew Timmy.
Let's go.
At some point.
We got something there.
But Denver, I had posted this online. This was very early in the game, but Denver had not missed. I think they were like 4-for-5 or 5-for-6 or whatever. It was, and all of them were threes. And I was just like, the Lakers being down 7 when Denver is this hot is actually good for the Lakers. And I said, we're going to win this game. Now, the number of times I've said, we're going to win this game or we're going to lose this game, and the opposite things happen, it's just like, look.
Nah, you're pretty good on those. You're selling yourself short here. You're pretty accurate on those. But it does happen. It's not like you're putting it in the refrigerator, right? That only broke like once or twice. Yeah.
There are times where Nostradarius is real, and there are times where it's definitely not.
Nostradarius.
But the predictive factor of this, I was just like, look, man, if Denver scores 160 points tonight because they don't miss, then the Lakers are going to tip their cap and that's that. But I have a feeling that they are going to cool off eventually. And the defensive adjustment that you cited helped them cool off to a great degree, because I think at halftime or right in the third quarter, I looked at the box score and I messaged you and I said, Murray can't have 26 points and 7 assists.
Mm-hmm.
You can't be letting him go off as a scorer and be this shot creator for teammates where they're just getting good look after good look after good look. And JJ Redick, God bless him, we know he hates to put two on the ball, but he said, fuck it. This dude is not going to see a clean avenue towards anything the rest of the game. And as often as he had the ball, the Lakers were basically just running a second defender at him, not hard every single time, but like, no, this dude's just standing here, or he's inching closer to you and he's trying to cut off a driving angle. Murray's a shifty player and he looks as athletic and shifty as he's looked maybe since the bubble to me, just his ability to get to spot on the court, Pete, that I was just like, okay. And after that, Denver had nothing. They had no shot creation at all. And the same rhythm that they were in to start the game, they were in an anti-rhythm.
Yes.
In the second half, where their shot creation fell off to such a degree that they no longer had any comfort level with the shots that they were getting.
100%. And I think a big part of that is for those players, like a guy like Jones, knowing what's going to happen next in a sequence, if you stay in the same defensive coverage for too long, it's sort of like figuring out a maze or a puzzle or something. It's I turn left twice, and then I go straight for a little bit, then I go right, and then I find the end of it. And once a team sort of figures out what you're in and what they need to do to beat it, generally they just spam it, and they just kind of keep doing that. And that happened early on. Even with the three-point shooting, there was certainly a degree of, man, these guys are hot. And you know, I can roll my eyes at the whole, oh, just another hot shooting night from the other team. But I did think it was genuine on some level in last night's game. But there's also a certain amount of guy like Jones knows when and where he's going to get the ball from, that by putting two on the ball, but like you said, the way that they did it, it wasn't a trap, like they're right pressed up on Murray. And it was more like they were hedging on ball screens, and then they were bringing the second defender up, but not all the way. What's the value of that? Why not just go all the way up on the ball and be like, we're going to trap and try to get deflections? Why does it work going up, but not committing to it all the way? Are you not in no man's land?
Murray's too quick for that. Mm-hmm. And so the Lakers tried to put two on the ball against Ant in the playoffs last year. And Ant was just like, oh, you're See trying ya. To hedge up on
Road
me?
Roadrunner, with like, meep. Yep.
Yeah, like, oh, I'm back dribbling. I'm stringing out my dribble and then I'm crossing over and I'm splitting. Or I've got a wide enough angle here to just keep stringing out and just go around. And Murray was dancing last night. I'm just like, oh, man. The step back three he hit over Marcus Smart, where he like changed direction multiple times and then hit the massive step back from literally like he was 3 feet inside the arc to being a foot and a half outside the arc by the time that his step back was done and hits that three. His movement again was just too severe for the Lakers to be like, we're going to press up on you. That would have been disastrous. Mm-hmm. So I thought the Lakers were very smart in being in a more contained
yes.
double team.
And it gives you a shorter rotation to get back because Murray's going to pass out of that and everybody's going to have to rotate. If what ends up happening is if you double the ball, what the ball handler is supposed to do is dribble drag backward. And so it's like, they're the bait, right? It's like, oh, you want to double team me? Luka does this all the time. It's like, okay, yes. Double team me at half court. I pass it out of here, and now they've got all this space in the 4-on-3 that not going all the way up like that shortens that a bit.
For you NFL fans, it was like the throws that Caleb Williams was making on freaking fourth down, uh-huh. where he's like running backwards forever and then being like, oh, now everyone is pressed up on me. I'm going to throw it as far as I can, and my wide receiver's behind the defense. I also thought the Lakers were very smart in that where they were sending the double from the furthest part of the court.
Ooh, good call.
And making it so that the pass that Murray was going to have to make was also like an extended pass. And the guy who was playing two on the backside a lot was like LeBron. And when it was LeBron, he's so smart in terms of how he can cover two on the backside that several of those possessions where the ball ended up in Tim Hardaway Jr.'s hands a couple of times. And LeBron was there to give a pretty good contest. And look, Hardaway Jr. can get hot. Last night, he was frozen cold. He was like 0 for 8 from 3. If some of his threes go in, maybe this is a different game. Also, if Denver doesn't hit every three to start the game, then maybe it's a different game.
So
it's just like,
out.
It yeah. evens out.
Well, and even then, like a lot of the threes that Hardaway was getting, these are not those same in-rhythm threes that Jones was getting, for example. Like,
that's right.
Yes, he missed a couple of shots, and Hardaway's a guy that once he gets hot, even the hard ones go in for sure.
Yes.
But that's the whole point, is that you don't let guys like him get on fire, and you can do that by sort of making the game more random rather than they're in their normal base defensive scheme. We know we do this, then we do that, then we do this, and it's an open corner three. It becomes more random, and all of a sudden your feet aren't set the way you like, the ball isn't in your shooting pocket the way that you like it, and all that. So let's take an early break here, come back, keep it going.
The thing I liked as well to the double teams, Pete, and this is very similar to what happened with the zone against Toronto, is that Toronto broke the Lakers zone two or three different times. And it got broken to a degree where at one point you texted me and said, the zone might have...
Yeah, it's time to get out of it. Yeah, and somebody who's a proponent for it, right? Like, you got to get out of this, because that's my philosophy with zones, is sort of once they have it figured out, it's like, they're on to us, boys. Like, we got to do something else. And the Lakers started this game in the zone and Denver was doing that. So it's almost a continuation of that yes. story in this game from last game.
The life cycle of something can end. And what I appreciated about the Raptors game is that the Lakers did get out of it, but in the fourth quarter, they went back to it again, and they were just like, we're willing to live with some of the losing possessions that we have with this, because overall, we feel confident that the looks that we're holding them to or that their broken rhythm is going to stay. And the Lakers, that ended up being true, and they were smart for that. And so in this game against Denver, they figured out the traps a couple of different times. Aaron Gordon cut through and then looped back to the foul line and then got the ball in the middle of the court. And then he hits a little jumper. Jones caught the ball in like a short roll, basically had his back to the basket and then throws up a little shot and that goes in.
Denver has one of the deepest bags offensively, even without Jokic, from a prepared to play against any style of defense. For example, Toronto, I thought they contributed to the Lakers' success with the zone because I didn't think their zone offense was very good. Part of the reason we were getting cooked at the beginning of that game is we started running that and Denver knew exactly what to do. And so they will challenge you and end those life cycles with them defensively are shorter than with a lot of other teams.
The Lakers could have stopped trapping. A couple of those possessions were like, oh, have they figured us out? They're flashing to the middle, Murray stringing it out, he's throwing a pass here, they're getting four on threes or getting open looks, like, is this over? And basically the Lakers were like, yeah, we'll live with that. Your two possessions of success, they're not getting us out of this idea by any means necessary. Murray's not going to beat us. And the Lakers' ability to then like sort of stick with something, even in the face of a couple possessions going bad, I thought there's a persistence there that I'm appreciative of, because there can be a stubbornness. JJ has shown this as well, where it's just like, are they going to change their coverage at all when they've been in man at times, right? And I'm just like, look, man, like this isn't working right now. And your defense is getting cooked. And so the persistence and the stubbornness to sort of say like, oh, they've beaten us a couple of times, but we're going to stay with it. This time I appreciated the stubbornness because they were just like, well, Murray's not going to get us, right? And on the other side of the court, Pete, then this is where I want to shift topics. Luka was unbelievable. And when Denver started out the game hot, the whole Lakers team wasn't hot, but Luka sure as hell was. His whole first shift, he didn't miss. And he was not taking easy shots. Step back here, little double clutch three, a little like leaner with a guy into his body. Like he was just making every shot imaginable. And he kept them connected in the first part of the game, where if Luka's not that hot, Denver's up 15 out of the gate and it feels like the game is already away from you.
This is a strong belief that I have. The topic of being clutch and clutch minutes. Billy Mack is seemingly enjoying trolling Stu a little bit, bringing up clutch stats and all of that. And it's too rigid of a definition for me, the way that we track this, because this is something Kobe used to do all the time of, you can be clutch at a bunch of different points of the game. And knowing when you need to do something is very important and underrated. And that at the beginning, when they're hitting every single shot, only reason we were close is because Luka. He was the main reason that we were close in that game. But then also there was a point where we go down 16 in that third quarter, and within 2.5 minutes, we were down five. And it was like four or five plays from Luka on both ends of the floor that led to that. And so that to me is also clutch, because that was, there are points of the game where you start losing the rope a little bit, where if you lose it even more, that 16 goes to 25. We've seen this happen with the team on several occasions, that him being able to be like, oh, hell no, I'm going to wrestle this back over. And I know we didn't have Christian Brown last night, but talk to me a little bit about that Luka problem that Denver has.
In yesterday's pod, I talked about how Luka's biggest weakness can also be like his biggest strength. That emotion on my sleeve, like a fieriness, and that sort of pissed off, I'm now in revenge mode against you. And Luka didn't get as many calls as he would like. He could get 100 calls and he still wouldn't get as many calls as he would like. So no news there. But he was particularly mad at Tyler Ford, and he had picked up a tee and he was still arguing and still slapping his own arms, being like, this is what they're doing to me. He's yelling and one when he scores. But there was that stretch where Luka turned up on both sides of the floor. And when he is racing the court in transition with the ball in his hands, you know that he's got it going. And he had that sequence, Pete, where he had that steal where he like jumped the passing lane where Murray was trapped. He tried to throw it over the top, I think, to Aaron Gordon, and Luka looped behind from the backside, tapped the ball away, and then the ball got up court. LeBron's racing, and then he throws that sort of like skipping bounce pass to Laravia in the corner. If Jake would have caught that cleanly, he probably shoots a three. Instead, though, the ball kind of trickled towards him, and he didn't have an open look. And Luka had raced the court and then looped back towards Jake. Jake hits him, and Luka hits a step back three from the left wing. And that play was symbolic to me of Luka's playing with juice and emotion and the fire that he had in him of being upset at the refs or whatever else was going on was fueling him. The thing about Denver and the overall, like, Luka being able to attack them is I actually think even with Christian Brown, now they didn't have him yesterday, is they don't have the ideal defender for Luka.
Totally.
Gordon is a bit too big. Gordon's very good against LeBron at this stage, but he's a little bit not as shifty enough defensively. Yes. At the point of attack against Luka. And he doesn't have extreme length like a Giannis does or someone like that, while also being strong enough. So Gordon can absorb Luka's shots when he tries to bump him off or whatever, mm-hmm. but Luka's quick for him.
He is. And one of the guys that I think does the best job on Luka is Jaylen Brown. We saw that in the finals, but also in the matchup with them last year, that is sort of like a shorter version of Aaron Gordon, right? If Aaron Gordon were 6'6", 6'7", type of thing. But I think that distinction in quickness is very important, because so much of Luka is keeping you off balance, that if you lean the wrong way, being bigger is actually a disadvantage on that front.
And I don't think Brown is big enough. Christian Brown.
Mm.
You can get Luka in the post against guys that size. And that's why Jones was an interesting matchup for him, because Jones is, he's like Georges Niang to a certain degree, where it's just like, oh, big body, moves his feet a little bit better than what you would expect. I think Jones also got away with some handsiness a little bit. And it's one of the reasons why Luka was getting upset at the refs, but he was still cooking Jones. It was just difficult shots, but they don't have an individual defender that can really slow him down. And their bigs, if they play a traditional drop, he's going to cook them. And this is why I think, like, even with Jokic available, Jokic likes to play at the level, but Luka's too good of a passer for that. And so I just don't think Denver has a lot of defensive solutions for the way that Luka can play. And I'm just going to say it. Luka seems to get up for these matchups. He seems to be like, I'm in a rhythm against this team. And his shot making was there.
Yeah.
And once the three is falling, Pete, he's too hard to defend, especially if you can't contain the dribble against him.
And one of the other elements that he brings into it is how he uses his teammates as a threat. DeAndre Ayton missed the second half of that game, only played 14 or 15 minutes, got poked in the eye, looking like a pirate, posted a funny R caption with his eye patch after the game.
Online, I said that he looked like Slick Rick.
Yeah, there you go. It's a children's story, yeah. And so we got Jackson Hayes starting the second half, and there were several moments, even in that run that I was alluding to earlier, where they cut it from 16 down to 5 in like 2.5 minutes, where being able to pin Denver with Hayes on the floor, like, you're pinning a help defender in that if you put a little extra attention toward Luka, and I thought he was masterful at this last night, he was getting it immediately toward Hayes. And so there's a certain amount, even with Jokic in the mix, there's an over the top behind you when you've got Luka out there, that Luka uses Hayes to keep them honest. I also was really excited to see Rui get 13 shots off of the bench. It's the most shots that he's had in a game since November 30th. It's January 21st as we record this, so almost 2 months. He only went 4 for 13, but I thought he missed some really good looks within that. So team's starting to sort of coalesce into this, what I've been hoping for between the zones, between the zone defenses, the proliferation of the post-up attacks. Let's talk some Drew Timmy and second unit in this last segment here. Exciting couple of wins and a great way to kick off the road trip. Let's go to break here, come back, and keep going.
Yeah, so Drew Timmy had that really good game in Portland as a scorer in a game that the Lakers got blown out in, that didn't really score much at all in the win over Toronto. But I thought the one three-pointer that he did hit was one of those critical ideas of don't leave me alone out here.
Absolutely. And they were playing through him in a lot of these units. So even if he wasn't the guy who was scoring, he was the guy who was sort of starting the play on some very successful plays, even if he wasn't getting an assist.
He's a very smart offensive player and knows what he's doing. And against Denver, he again pick and pop with Luka. And Iztok had mentioned this online, where he had said that everyone loves a lob threat with Luka, but a pick and pop big can be just as critical to his success. And Luka is, I think, very, very, very attuned to when I have a pick and pop big, I'm going to drag the defense with me and I'm going to create as much separation as I can in order to get my shooter a good look. And so Timmy again, wide open three, first shot, buries it. And that to me sets a tone for, okay, defense, what are you going to do? The first three you gave this big man, it went in. How are you going to react? And it's not like Timmy then took a bunch of extra threes. What ended up happening was, though, is they started to defend him with smaller players. And he got into the post against Tim Hardaway, mm-hmm. and he was just like, oh man, I'm back at Gonzaga right now. He's like, you're going to put a small dude on me?
No chance. How many circumstances, too, do you get in the NBA where you've got a two-way contract guy on the floor with the ball in his hands in a situation where a legit longtime pro is like, yeah, this guy has no chance to guard him? This is a very unique circumstance.
And so the Lakers playing these big lineups, right? And without Ayton in the mix, it was Timmy with Vando. But Vando was like the quote-unquote center defensively.
Well, and Rui was in there too in the second half. They did run it with Ayton in the first half with that group, but it was Rui that was the sub for Ayton.
Yes, and so it was these groups where it's just like, okay, well, we've got all this front court size with like Rui and Vando and then Timmy, and Timmy gets to camp basically backside. And when the ball would swing to him, he's ducking into the post and he's just scoring. He's a very skilled offensive player. There was even a play where I can't remember who had the ball, but Timmy had flashed into the paint for a duck in. It might have been Luka who had it. Timmy didn't get the ball, but Luka started to drive. So Timmy just went into instant Gortat screen mode and cleared out the paint by basically giving a hard post up that he was backing his guy out. And I think it was Luka, but the Lakers got a layup at the rim mm-hmm. because
LeBron
of that.
LeBron got one too on that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the whole idea of can you protect him enough defensively? Because offensively, he is an NBA player. Defensively, it remains to be seen like how much utility he actually has on that end of the floor. But they've been trying to protect him with zones. They've been trying to cover him up by putting him on a non-important offensive player. And like, you go guard that guy. And on the other end of the court, you are going to get the ball in the post against smaller guys. You're going to pick and pop. And we're comfortable giving you the ball as a decision maker because he makes fast decisions and he clearly understands what the next action is within the sequence and where the ball should go. And it's great to see him being used in this way where he is a nice slotting figure next to Vando, I feel like, mm-hmm. where it's just like, you sort of counterbalance the offensive utility here where, yeah, this guy just knows what he's doing there.
Him being described as a pick and pop big is a game changer for him in his career. That isn't something that has really been, despite being a very offensively talented player. And we're still early. We're talking less than 10 threes he's taken for the Lakers in at least in real minutes. But being able to knock down that shot. And I loved your point. And it's so funny because you brought this up, I think, on yesterday's pod of talking about that pick and pop big hitting their first three and sort of the impact of it and seeing him come out and do that. He also has a bit of ball handling ability that it's not like he's making crazy crossovers or anything like that. But when I talk about ball handling, especially with a big man, it's like, Can you not get stripped in traffic? And if you're going to be on Tim Hardaway Jr., I think his third bucket that he had, he dribbled himself down from the three-point line on the right side of the court. He backed him down, drop step baseline, and then a little floater over the top. But he brought himself from, you know, 23 feet away from the basket to about 6 feet away from the basket off of the dribble, which is something that not every five can do. And so having that level of offensive skill, putting the jump shot on top of that really adds a whole new level to his game. Had a great layup as well where he was setting a flare screen for Gabe and he slipped it, which is a great way to beat switching defenses. I would always tell my players switch equals slip on a lot of the actions that we had, where if you know that they're gonna switch it, all you got to do is sell it, make them believe that you're going to go up and set that screen and then cut right to the basket. We get all sorts of cheap points off of that. LeBron read it, little lefty layup like yep. It was nothing. Good stuff.
Great pass from LeBron there. And that's an action that the Lakers have been running all season. Laravia's gotten a bunch of baskets out of that same action where you come up and set the back screen and then immediately cut. The fact that Timmy's only been with the team for as long as he has, and he's sort of aware of that, and LeBron instantaneously knowing like, well, this is the read and I'm going to pass. And LeBron, I've said this before about him, but he's a great anticipatory passer. Like he passes guys open a lot. And Timmy, he was on the same page as LeBron. And this is why I honestly think that after the Portland game, when LeBron got asked about Timmy, he said, he's a guy who can help us if he continues to get playing time. And LeBron's not just going to say that about any player. Adu has a good game. He's not going to be like, oh, well, Adu can help us if he just can. No, he sees that Timmy is in this sort of Brad Miller, smart, understanding how to play offense mold. And those guys typically have really good chemistry with LeBron.
Saying, I think he should play is a big statement. That's LeBron gets asked all the time about, you know, Nick Smith Jr. has a big game type of thing. Hey, Bron, what do you think about Nick tonight? And he's been asked some version of that question dozens and dozens of times throughout his career. But he normally doesn't put on the end of that. And if he continues to play, type of thing, you know what I mean?
Exactly,
and so
yes.
That, you know, getting his cosign. But it's so cool to see the direction this team is going in. I was telling you before the pod, I really hope that when Austin comes back that I think we're facing sort of a Gabe versus Timmy, like last guy up in the rotation type of thing. I really, really hope that it's Timmy. It's cool to see the direction that we're going in.
It is. And I'm glad you brought up when Austin returns, because we'll close the pod here with this idea, Pete. We got news that Austin will play at some point on this road trip. Now, this road trip's about 100 games long and it might last until 2027. Honestly. 8-game roadie. I know that the Lakers go back to Los Angeles for part of it, but they play road games and they're in 8 different cities, 16 days, long time on the road. So who knows when Austin will return. But what did you make of JJ basically volunteering? He's going to play at some point on this trip with seemingly the messaging. So I'm excited about the prospect of Austin coming back over the next couple of weeks, it looks like.
Hell yeah, man. You know, when you are installing your offense and defense as a coach early on, you do breakdown drills. I brought this up a couple of times where you work on just specific segments, even if it's just between 2 or 3 players. This is how you guys all interact. And then you keep building the breakdowns into more and more sophisticated, and you put it together and it's your whole offense or your whole defensive system. The way that this Lakers season has broken down, it's just been so distinctive in the Luka and Austin part of the season and then the Luka and LeBron part of the season that are different from each other, with Luka obviously as the common thread and he's doing his thing in both. But a lot more post play, a lot more horns, just a different style of basketball that what I'm so excited about is when Austin comes back, Austin can play in that big bully ball type of style. Like seeing Austin even with that second unit with that group with Timmy and all of that, that whole idea of being big and skilled, if you've got LeBron, Ayton, Timmy, and Austin all on the floor, they're all big and super skilled for their positions. And so that, I think he can really play into that. And it also gives that certain level of crap, we're bigger and more skilled than you type of lineups aren't good enough. But this guy right here can cook you with his speed, can beat you off of the dribble, can attack in different ways. I'm just so excited to see the different breakdown drills or whatever put together into one offense. And I think that's going to define this third quarter. How did you take the news of Austin coming back soon?
Just super excited to be able to get him back soon and to have that on the horizon. The fact that we hadn't really gotten an update yet and the All-Star break coming up in like basically a month, I was just like, okay, well, the Lakers are going to be on the road up until the trade deadline. And then shortly after the trade deadline, they're going to break for the All-Star stuff. And I'm just like, is Austin going to sit? How long is he going to sit? If he doesn't play in this roadie, it's just like they're back on what, like the 5th or whatever it is. And that's the trade deadline. And so to have an update that he's going to come back, and granted, he's going to show some rust, I'm sure. And he's going to have to get back up to game speed. And, you know, when your calf is hurt, it's not like you've been doing a ton of conditioning and running around. And so it's going to take some time for him. That said, Pete, the things that Austin does best, the get downhill, the play pick and roll, those are all things that work great with Ayton. I truly believe that Ayton has missed Austin the most out of every player. We know that Austin can play with Jackson. We know that he's got great chemistry with LeBron. And if they do end up playing in some of these double big lineups where you can have a pick and roll partner on both sides of the court, I honestly think that those Luka-Austin groups with potentially having, you know, Jackson in the game and maybe even Timmy during those parts of the games too, you can find these really spirited offensive groups where it's just like the other team is going to have problems defending you. And Austin's just been such a good player this year for the team. And he's just super important, I think, from a personality and a leadership standpoint within his own style, that I'm just excited at the prospect of having him back in the mix. And I am wondering about what it's going to mean for those rotation players like Gabe, or what it might mean for Timmy, what it might even mean for Vando.
He's in that mix too.
Because the idea of Vando, Timmy, and Gabe being in sort of a death match for like who's going to play and who's going to sit, I get that Vando's had some issues. He's back in a major shooting slump as a three-point shooter, but I love his work on the glass still. I love that he's going to be intense on defense. The things that he does do from a positive standpoint, those things are so much more stable that I want to continue to see him play.
I do too. And I think he's got a very clear role in that unit with Timmy and Ayton, that big group. That I think is the most viable lineup I've seen Vando in on this team. And it's not like, you know, Vando or Jackson can't work in certain groups, but I do think that Vando in a Luka and Jackson group really neuters the pick and roll in a lot of ways, because you can send so many more defensive assets into the paint without paying as much of a price on the perimeter, that if Vando is properly used, which I do think is just as a two-shift player in those two type of groups, I think we're right there. But that, I think, is one of the next things to resolve, is those Luka-only groups and how they can get the best minutes out of those. But a really good win in Denver last night to kick off this 8-game roadie. We will be back. We'll have another pod out. Have one of our mini pods talking about how we use stats. That's something that we recorded recently. Also had the Baxter Holmes piece come out today that neither of us have read yet, that we're going to skim through. And if we find it interesting enough, we might record a little mini pod about that too. But later today, after this one, we're going to have just a little pod about just the use of stats in the NBA. And we will be back tomorrow to talk more hoops. But until then, you've been listening to the Laker Film Room podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn, he's double teamed. Just pass out of front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic, got it. Magic fires. It's in. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound to Vlade. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way. Good!
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his 8th block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance,
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Ready pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two, one.
Miss it.
Unbelievable.
It's over.
Shot clock now to 5.
Bryant. Yes! And that was a little tap to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.